Hey, everybody. It's almost the end of the year. I got some dates left. You should come see me. Number one, I'll be in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. November 21st through November 23rd, I will be at the Pittsburgh Improv. So come check out a show there. Then late show, Friday, December 6th in Chicago, Illinois. Two shows at the Vic Theater. First one is sold out. Thank you, guys. Second one, tickets available. So go get your tickets right now for the late show, December 6th, Chicago, Illinois, the Vic Theater. Saturday, December 7th, I will be at Turner Hall in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. So come on out to a show December 7th in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And then closing it out, Sacramento, California, December 12th through the 14th, I will be at The Punchline, one of my favorite clubs in the country. Haven't been back to Sacramento since my grandmother died. So that'll be fun. Punchline rules. Get tickets right now at dancehunter.com. Absolutely. Yeah, Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen, for you, were those movies you watched when you were a kid?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm going to wait to say it on the podcast, but Mary-Kate and Ashley.
Oh, we just fucking roll, dude.
This we're is rolling. Ooh-wee.
Yeah.
Well, now I'm freezing in the moment. Mary-Kate and Ashley has my favorite joke of all time, which is Mary-Kate or Ashley, hard to tell around the holidays, especially around the holidays. But one of them is riding a horse and the other one is on the ground and she can't hear her. And she says, Mary, are you asking me equestrian? Ooh. Are you asking me equestrian?
That is, you know how, I mean, come if on. You got that as a young kid, on, you were a smart kid.
Well, my mom's a horse trainer, so I was fully equestrian.
Are you good at riding a horse?
As much as the next guy. I don't know, it's a weird way to put it, I guess.
That is a weird way to, because if I'm the next guy, I can't ride a horse.
Sure. Yeah. So maybe better than the next guy. Yeah.
Like if you, hypothetically, if there was an apocalypse situation, could you jump on a horse and be like, I can go to town and tell them.
Do the Paul Revere thing? Yeah. Yeah.
Could you do that?
I could lead the charge. Yeah, sure. Yeah. We would ride him like bareback. Yeah. Really? So you, without the saddle.
Without a condom?
And stuff like that. Yeah. Yeah. You would just jump on him and go. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it feels so warm. Yeah. But I think that's like, you can get on a horse and go like, yeah.
And make him go. It's a trust thing. Yeah.
Is it?
Well, you know, why do dogs like some people and not like other people?
Yeah.
It's the same thing. Horses are just like real big, smart dogs. That's what I've said for years. They're like real big, smart dogs. And so, yeah. For sure, I could probably jump on a horse, and depending on the horse, some of them aren't as...
Have you ever had a horse be like, fuck you, get the fuck off me?
Uh-huh.
Really?
Sure. Yeah, they call them green horses. The ones who aren't... They're not born ready for you to ride them. You have to train them to be ridden.
When your mom would give you like life lessons, would she do it through like horse analogies?
Yes, 100%.
She really would?
Yes.
She'd be like, Casey, just like I told you, a Bronco ain't busted until you... It's like stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's fucking awesome.
Uh-huh. You can't go through life trotting if you're not ready to do a little canter every once in a while. Yeah.
So dressaging all over the place if you're just walking sideways.
But horses, they do something called cribbing, which is where they chew on wood because it releases endorphins.
Okay.
And it's bad for their teeth and it's bad for the horse. So you put bits in their mouth to prevent them from cribbing. And I remember I used to get in trouble as a teenager for being drunk or whatever, drinking Robitussin or whatever. And she would take me to the barn and she would say, watch Stetson. And Stetson was one of the horses. And see him cribbing? It's because I took his bit out. Do we need to put a bit in you, or are you going to learn how to not? I don't know if she was threatening to
That's fucking to cripple wild. Me or? That's so wild. Yeah. You notice him? No. You notice what I did to him? And you're like, what does this have anything to... Meanwhile, you're on Robitussin, so it's like, I don't even know what you're talking about, Mom. It's so funny, you robo-tripping, and she's like... She's like, now you notice that I fed him a carrot. Do I need to feed you a carrot?
I love a carrot. Thanks.
Did you have to do the did you have to do the Varsity Blues thing where you were like, I want to be a comic. I don't want to train no horse.
She never wanted that life for me. She didn't? It was one of those things where she knew life on the farm was tough, and she was always very supportive of my dreams.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
When did you move from Georgia?
I left Georgia when I was 23. When I graduated from Georgia Southern, and then I moved to Idaho for a couple years.
What'd you do in Idaho?
Just kind of chasing, trying to find myself.
Yeah, fuck yeah. What a good place to do it.
Yeah.
Where'd you live? Like Coeur d'Alene?
Boise.
In Boise?
I lived in Boise, and Yeah, go to Nampa all the time. Yeah, but I had some buddies move out there, and I never knew anybody who had ever been anywhere near there. And yeah, just kind of got stuck there. COVID happened. So I was out there for like 3 years. Yeah.
Oh, so you went up there and then COVID hits. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Many people got fucking locked into places because they were like, I'm going to try this. And they were like, worldwide pandemic. Yeah. You're fucking stuck here.
Just stuck in Boise, Idaho.
Yeah. I mean, Idaho is fucking beautiful.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
But it is a place that you go to escape because you've killed someone.
Yeah, there's a lot of woods. It has also the largest per capita. They think there's a large population of Bigfoot up there in northern Idaho.
That's where it all is.
Yes. Yeah.
If you're a
last place you'd look.
Cryptozoologist, you can go up there and find. If Bigfoot is real, this guy's undefeated at not getting caught. Because you would think now, Nate Bargatze used to have a joke about that where he's like, it'd be on the news. And you're like, yeah, it would be. If they found Bigfoot.
Yeah.
But man, I want it. Now more than ever, fucking show yourself. If we knew there was a bunch of Harry and the Hendersons living in the fucking woods.
Well, yeah, I think it could be the solution we're looking for.
Because if you have an alpha predator like that,
sure,
it would make humans be nicer to each other.
The new enemy.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
The new enemy.
If you had something to worry about, it would make humans want to be like, hey, maybe I don't care who my neighbor voted for. I got a Bigfoot coming down on me right now. Do you believe in all that shit?
Sure. That's what Reagan said during one of his speeches, which is commonly quoted in a lot of UFO documentaries, that he hopes that someday there will be an intergalactic threat that will bring all of humanity together. That same general idea that if we had a common enemy, suddenly these borders wouldn't matter.
Yeah. Now, what Reagan? Early Reagan or old Reagan?
I think it was old Reagan.
Because old Reagan.
Yeah. Brother, he said a lot of stuff. Yeah,
that's not him talking. That's another guy. And they just got jelly beans in his mouth. The way they used to put peanut butter in horses' mouths is to make them talk.
Yeah. Mr. Ed like, style.
Well, where am I? Dude, that kind of like an old president you don't realize, just absolutely out of his tits. And he's like, tear down that wall. Where the fuck? I love that. I love the thought of just putting someone completely incapable.
Just like, letting them ride.
Just let it roll, dude. Mm-hmm. Give them the missile codes.
The scariest day of the year is Christmas Eve. What do you mean by that?
Yeah why? He can get anywhere. Yeah.
It's the happiest day. Yeah.
Do you know something about Santa we don't know? Yeah. What if here's the real story of Santa Claus? James Claus grew up. Dude, I like aliens and all that shit. Idaho's a big place for aliens.
Yeah. It is. Well, it's the last place people are looking. Montana is huge. That whole tri-state area, Wyoming, Idaho, Montana.
I'm real big into aliens. It's funny because Big J and I always talk about this. He's like, if they were real, people would already know. And I'm like, I think people choose not to believe.
I think so. Oh, and there's been 50 years, 70 years of disinformation since World War II, where it's convincing people that it's only loony people believe that.
Yeah.
And nobody wants to be loony.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think genuinely, it could land on the White House lawn and people would forget about it.
Yeah, they'd be like, it's a Hollywood movie.
Yeah,
and you're like, no, it's for real.
100% that is what would happen.
Yeah.
100%.
Because the denial's easier.
Mm. Yeah.
Than just going like, oh, there's grays and there's like different kinds. I watched this interview with this lady from the 70s. I'm really into the subreddit Aliens. They put up all these like cool old videos. But this lady from the 70s was saying about how the little ones we see on Earth, and this is from like 1978, this interview, she said the tiny grays are actually like little robots. They're like little androids because the gravity of Earth aliens can't come down here.
Okay.
Because it'll fuck with them. Like, it's too strong of a pressure. The vibrations are too strong.
Yeah.
So they say when they abduct humans, they can only do it quickly because they have to change the vibrations so the humans can go on their ship. And they said that's why when they put humans back on Earth, they're bruised or they have injuries is because that, like, going from the heavy vibration.
Yeah. It's almost like having the bends.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's exactly it. And I was like, that makes sense. And then no one else wants to talk to me about it. I bring it up to all my friends and they're like, shut the fuck up about this.
Well, I've read almost all the books by the guy who wrote The Mothman Prophecies, John Keel, who is a wonderful ufologist. And, he's my favorite one, except maybe Jacques Vallée. So yeah, I love all that. I read
it. So you're like super into it.
For sure. Yeah. I love stuff like that.
Do you believe that they are interdimensional?
I think that is more than likely what is happening.
Yeah. They just like show up.
Mm-hmm. They blip in and out.
Yeah. And and nothing would bring them faster than a fucking nuke.
Sure. And that is exactly when the modern UFO age began, is when we dropped those fucking bombs.
Because it was like an ant had a handgun.
Yeah.
And they're like, whoa, what the fuck?
They see some alert in the cosmos and they're like, we got to go see what's going on.
And then it's us being like, we did it for freedom. And they're going like, you guys don't even know what you're fucking doing. That's got to be like how stupid we think people are, and how dumb aliens must think we are. Where they're like, you fucking idiots.
Trick or treat. Yeah.
I'm back, boys.
Blew up a city.
So you actually grew up in a barn?
Yeah, at various parts of my life. Yeah, sure.
Yeah?
A couple different parts of my childhood, we lived in a barn.
In the actual barn?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you like sleep above?
There was like a little apartment in the barn.
I didn't know if you had like beds and hay.
No, not like that.
Like cartoon mouses, how they go up there and then they...
And then my dinner table is a matchbox. Yeah. So cool to you think about. Just running.
Are you fucking... are you Jerry from Tom and Jerry? Yeah, that... I mean, growing up, when you grow up in a place like that rural in Georgia,
mm-hmm.
coming to a city like New York, you must just be like, fuck this. Why would I ever want to live in a place like this?
Well, it was... You know, so my parents were divorced and my dad had a home. So we would spend some time there. And then my mom, we would move around a lot of different places. So like a little camper or live in a barn a couple different times and stuff like that. So it was, moral of the story. Yeah. New York is a little much.
How many brothers and sisters do you have?
I have an older sister. And then later in my life, my father remarried. I have two half brothers.
Okay.
Yeah. Little brothers.
Are they, are they stoked about what you do?
Yeah. One of them is 16. I think as much as a 16-year-old can show emotion. Yeah. He thinks it's kind of cool.
He's like, yeah, whatever. You're fine.
You're fine. You have tons of followers.
Yeah. You know, he brags about you to like probably all his friends.
Yeah.
And then he talks to you. He's like, yeah, it's cool or whatever.
That's fine.
Yeah, dude, being an older brother like that's got to be cool.
It is cool. Do you have siblings?
No. I had one, but she got killed. But we don't got to talk about that. Sure. The aliens took her. So that's why I'm into it. You find out. So that's why I brought you here. We're hunting them.
I don't think them down.
That's a so Casey, you've had experience with them. I got to get my sister back.
That's a tall burden. Yeah, to lay on somebody.
Like, dude, I thought I was going to fucking talk about comedy. Instead, I got to go find this guy's sister.
Great.
Yeah.
Got to skip my shows tonight to go look on for the New Jersey Devil.
Yeah, dude. I just watched the Channel 5 thing about the New Jersey Devil.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Andrew Callahan went hunting for him. He was supposed to be on our podcast, and he got sick.
Oh, no.
But I'm like, oh, this is a new thing that I was unaware of.
Yeah.
I didn't know about the New Jersey Devil.
There's lots of cryptids. Do people actually see it? I thought that's more of like a folklore type thing.
They have a guy, he interviewed a guy that said he saw it when he was a kid.
Oh no.
But always to me, if there's only just one guy, you're like,
sure.
I don't really know if that's...
There needs to be a community. With the Bigfoot, there's people who see him all the time and then he's gone. So I think it's all, you know, it's all under the umbrella. John Keel talks about the phenomena. It's all a symptom of the phenomena.
Yeah.
UFOs, poltergeists, Bigfoot, even lake monsters. These things tend to bleed in and then bleed out. It's like we're seeing something that is there, but not really. It's like an interdimensional thing. Yeah.
Do you think it's almost like a thing where our eyes can't see it because we don't know it? Like there's the story of when Cortez, when he went and took over the Mayans, like when he landed in Mexico with the Incans and Mayans, when all the Spaniards came and they had these ships and they were like covered in armor,
mm-hmm.
Montezuma, they had never seen any of this shit.
Yeah.
So they didn't see the ships coming. They like didn't see
them. They could not comprehend.
They couldn't comprehend an armada of ships coming to the thing. And then they just landed and they were like, what the fuck are these people? And then got slaughtered. But like, I wonder if that's what, like the phenomena.
Yeah.
Like we can't grip the mm-hmm. fact that there are Sasquatches or.
Yeah. It's being shown to us in a way that our brains can comprehend, but it's not what's actually there.
Yeah. And I like that better than people who just go, it's not real. Mm-hmm. And you go, well, that's not even fun.
No.
Fucking play along a little bit.
Well, we have so much more extrasensory. So many more senses than we're aware of, you know, why when you're walking, sometimes you get real scared and you don't understand why,
you know?
These things, like there's more to us, our eye that we can Yeah, we can't quite comprehend what we're looking
Which
at.
Which would make sense if aliens were so much smarter than us. They'd be like, oh, you're just not going to see me, motherfucker.
Yeah.
Like, because the new Netflix one came out, the Manhattan abduction, which I didn't even know about. But apparently a woman on the Lower East Side claims that she was pulled out of her apartment window and up into a ship in the middle of Manhattan.
Yeah.
And there are witnesses.
Oh, wow.
And now there's people saying they're like, nah, she's crazy or whatever. But there are people that are like, no, I saw it. It like happened. So now it's like, I mean, to be an alien and abduct someone out of fucking Manhattan is wild it's behavior. Bold.
Yeah.
You're going to get, because the, you know, speaking of Georgia, there's the story of Jimmy Carter, who in like, before he was like when he was a boy, him and eight other guys saw a UFO in Georgia.
Yeah, I think they were at like a Lions Club meeting or something.
Yeah.
One of those people with the red hats or whatever. Those Shriners, like a Shriners meeting.
Yeah, the one with the tassels on it.
Yes, yeah. And they're always asking for money and you don't know what it is for.
What
do
you fuckers do? Yeah, what do you guys do?
What are you using it
for? Are you hurting children?
Why are you all old?
Yeah.
Are all of you old? Do you guys
have songs and handshakes? But he saw, you know, him at the, like, him and eight of his buddies, I think, like, saw a UFO. And then he, part of the thing he ran on in 1976 was like, if I get elected, I'm going to let everybody know about the aliens.
Yeah.
And the story is that he got elected and then they had to talk with him.
Yeah.
Where they like sat him down and told him, they briefed him.
They shut it down.
They said they left the room and he was weeping in his hands.
Whoa.
And he was like, I can't tell people about what it really is. Because they said it fucked them up. Because they basically were kind of like, yeah, we're like an ant farm to them. They just like come and watch us. And he was like, and that's why he looks now at 100. Have you seen him now? He's like, take me. He looks like an alien now.
Yeah.
That like old, when they try to brag about celebrities when they get too old, you're like, don't do that.
Sure.
I don't need to see Jimmy Carter like that right now.
No. Yeah, Jimmy Carter celebrates 98th birthday with intimate ceremony with family and friends. And yeah, he's like,
that's exactly. He said, like, he wanted to hold on to vote one last time. And he was like,
just a little gargoyle.
If you're that old, it's got to be fun to fuck with people if they come close, like grab them. Just grab their arm and go, don't.
Yeah, don't get on the bus.
Don't get on the bus. I've seen what happens. Oh, an incoming storm. I get that old. All I'm doing is fucking with people. 100%. I'm touching any young person around me.
Yeah, it'll be a lot of shipwreck stories.
Yeah.
Like, weren't you born in 1981?
Yeah, you're like, dude, what are you talking about? You're never on a boat. I watched them all die.
It's just the speech from Jaws, but so much time has passed.
They don't
remember. Yeah. They don't
remember. What do you mean? I go, 72 men go in the water, 11 come out, eyes like black eyes, a doll's eyes. Yeah, that's like the kind of thing about getting old is I was always worried with my grandma that she was going to slip up and say something where I'm like, I don't want to hear this. I watched a boy drowned. And you're like, ah.
Oh,
fuck.
No, she could have helped.
Yeah, and we're like watching Jeopardy, you know? And I'm like, what? That, like, annoyed with old people shit? What are you talking about?
You come to peace with it at the end. Oh, God, she's done it before.
He's waiting for me.
Yeah.
He's waiting for me at the light. So when you moved Boise to Texas, was it for comedy?
Yeah, the pandemic had kind of slowed, so I moved right after kind of lockdown ended. No, not really. Left in 2021. So yes, I did move for comedy, but I was talking about my timeline. Yeah, I went down there and I lived in my car for a while. And,
shit.
Yeah, chasing it, man, living the dream.
You really? Yeah. How long did you live in your car for?
7 months.
Yeah, shit, dude.
Yeah,
so, I lived on a futon for 7 months. I thought it was tough, but a fucking car. How would you sleep? Let me ask your sleeping process.
Back seat.
Okay.
Back seat, and it was just enough. My head would have to be bent a little bit. It was a Ford Escape, so it was an SUV, so that was fine. But it was just enough for my feet. My body was fit pretty much perfectly in the back.
Now you didn't want to do the back seats down.
It'd be bad for my back, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
7 months in the back seat?
Yeah.
Where would you park?
Walmart.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They don't mess with you at most Walmarts. You could just park there.
Good tip. Yeah. If you're living in your car?
If you're traveling. And then, I would shower at Planet Fitness. And then, the last month or month or month and a half, I slept on a guy's couch, but I was out of my car. But
was that like luxury?
Yes, that was incredible.
When you got to the couch, where you're like, oh, baby, man. This is like a fucking California king.
Kicking my little toes up.
Yeah, because I remember when I moved from a futon to a bed, it wasn't even that good of a bed.
Yeah.
It was just like the cheapest bed I could buy, and I was like, this is fucking great.
Big city living.
So damn, Kill Tony, did that change your life? Is that what pulled you out of the car?
Yeah, I met William Montgomery. Yeah.
Hilarious.
So funny. And we did a show together, and then he put me on his show at Vulcan Gas Company, which was the big venue in Austin at the time.
Yeah, that was before Mothership was open.
Yeah. Yeah, about like 2 years before. And then Red Band heard about my set there and walked across the street to see me at Creek and then put me on his Instagram saying, like, this guy's so great. And then that changed my whole life. Yeah,
that's fucking awesome.
Uh-huh. I was just living in my car, and then Red Band saw me. Yeah.
And that's pretty fucking great.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Do you have an apartment now in Austin? Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Fucking.
Pretty sweet.
I always try to tell it, like, you know, I've been in it about 20 years now, and I see people my age, like, start to bitch about stuff where you're like, yeah, you forget about this part of comedy. You forget about the sleeping in your car, not giving a fuck just to do stand-up.
Yeah. I loved it. I thought that I was close to being able to make a living. So if I didn't think that, I wouldn't have done that. But yeah, I thought I was really close.
Absolutely blind.
Yeah.
And been like, fuck it. Let's just see what happens.
And I'd been doing comedy for 7 years already. So I had a good 20 or 30, like a real good 20 that I knew worked. And I figured if just some people saw it, I think I could make a living doing it. So
was that your thought moving to Austin?
Yeah. If people can see it, because I had been in Boise. I did comedy for 3 years in Georgia, 3 years in Boise. So I figured I was at a point where I at least had, it could be a good feature, you know, like I figured I had taken that next step. And, just from what people were saying and how people were reacting in Idaho. And I was like, well, you know, if you extrapolate that, if 100 people like it in Idaho, maybe 1,000 people would like it in Austin. So,
I mean, there's something to be said about that, about going and making sure you can do it. Cause that's where I started in Tucson. Mm-hmm. And when I started, I was just like, I just want to see if I can do this.
Yeah.
Like, I just want to see if I can do stand up.
Me too.
And that's how I felt when I moved here. Mm-hmm. I was like, if I can just fucking work there, like just do comedy in New York, I'll be fine with it.
Yeah.
Because you see people that come in, and I'm sure you see this in Austin all the time. You see guys that come in and they go like, in 1 year, I'm going to be a fucking Kill Tony regular in at the Mothership on Rogan. You're like, that ain't going to happen.
No. Well, even that mindset, I think, is self-regulating. People like that don't tend to find success. Only altruistic people, I feel like. People who are in it for the right reasons, which is kind of a crazy theory, but I think the universe kind of rewards that.
Absolutely. Yeah, if you're just trying to be funny and grow and shit like that. There was a guy that I knew that worked the road a lot, and he was from Texas, but I knew him in Tucson. And when we both moved to New York at the same time, and we were out front of this old place where Fifi smoking a cigarette, and he was like, if I don't get SNL, if I don't get a writing job on SNL in 6 months, I'm out of here. And literally I went, you should probably go, dude.
Yeah.
You should probably fucking go.
Cut out the middle, man. Yeah, take off.
Because that's such a wild thing.
I know.
It's like you learn how to throw a baseball and you're like, if I'm not in the majors by the end of the year, I'm giving up on this shit. It takes a while
It takes forever. Yeah.
But sleeping in your car is a great, it's that like, how much do you want it?
It's a good motivator too, of like, I gotta get out of this fucking car. It's hot. Yeah. I gotta get out of this car. Like,
I gotta crack a window.
Yeah.
I gotta get up. I'm fucking covered in sweat.
But it was also like not having a home, not even quote unquote, a literal home. It was like, if I'm not doing comedy, what am I doing? So I was doing comedy all day because I had nothing else. That was the whole reason I went there. So,
Well, the thing I love about your style when I watch it is it's so fucking fun that you have no... I was watching you riff at the Punchline in Sacramento.
Oh,
and you were talking about the guy behind the wall, like watching you. And I was laughing so fucking hard because it just seems like... Oh, this is nuts, but it's funny. Because some people are nuts and it doesn't go anywhere. But you're like, you've got this like chaos to you, but there's jokes the whole way through.
Yeah, I try to keep it. Generally, my mindset is that anyone can be crazy. Anyone can be like, go up there and be like, And that's also, I'm sober too. So that's also a part of it. Anyone can get fucked up and go up there and go, oh, I'm fucking Mr. Cuckoo.
Yeah.
But to have, I try to have some structure there to fall back on, because I would hate to be something without substance.
Yeah.
There are jokes. Yeah.
No, you have a ton of jokes.
Yeah, they're all little jokes.
I think probably there's some people that don't even realize that. You're like, that's punchline. Mm-hmm. Who are your guys like growing up? Who did you like? Because you have such a weird style. It's like, I kind of want to know who like led you to that.
Brody Stevens was a huge one for me. I would watch his stuff.
Dude, he was unbelievable.
So good. And that kind of gave me the mentality of sticking to it even when it's going poorly. Because a lot of his videos online, his Just for Laughs sets are so funny. And I used to watch him all the time because it's going so bad.
Yeah.
He's doing so bad and he's so confident. And that is what makes it so fucking funny.
He fucking warmed up. The year I taped Comedy Central Presents, he did one, but he also did the warm-up.
Okay.
But he would do the warm-up in a way where you would like, he would bomb.
Yeah.
And then just out of nowhere, just start fucking like killing, like bam, bam, bam. And they'd be like, all right, now we're gonna tape.
Yeah.
Like they were like waiting for him to break through, but he'd be like, yes. And he'd be like doing the drumming thing on the thing. And he'd be like, let's get it out here.
Yeah.
Energy, big energy. And it would be fucking awesome. And he was also such a sweetheart that it was, I love that kind of crazy shit. That's awesome. I didn't like, that's cool that Brody was your guy.
He really was.
Did you find him just on YouTube?
Yeah, just on YouTube. Yeah, I think maybe somebody had mentioned him on Comedy Bang Bang or something. Yeah, I started kind of getting into comedy. When I was younger, Galifianakis and Pablo Francisco were on Comedy Central, and I would see those, and I liked them when I was real young.
Yeah.
But then coming into college, Comedy Bang Bang was real big, and I think I heard his name on there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Comedy Bang Bang had a lot of great shit, too.
For sure.
And by the way, they were like the show at Rafifi.
That
was like when you would go see Comedy Bang Bang with Scott and all them, and like, but you would see other like Louis C.K. or Chris Rock drop in and like do a set. That's what was cool about Rafifi. It mixed all those worlds together.
Yeah. I always wanted to be like a zany kind of like them with the characters. And that's kind of just who I am. Like real silly. So
yeah,
I love that show.
Yeah. Silly is my favorite.
Yeah. Most people don't do it. Yeah.
I know. But like a real silly goose gets me going because I feel like there's so many people that try to hide them just giving opinions instead of jokes.
Sure.
But when you're silly, you ain't doing nothing but being silly.
Well, it's, I think most comics have a real, there's a turning point in their life. And most comics will go through a phase where they will do an act out on a bit, their first act out, and it'll bomb, and they never, ever want to do something like that ever, ever again, because it's so embarrassing.
Yes.
To be silly and have it go poorly is so humiliating. Yeah. But I would always think about Brody when I was trying to figure out what I was wanting to do, and because I just thought he was the funniest fucking, that was so funny to me.
Yeah.
To be, and even in Boise, I hadn't figured out how to make it funny, so it was just crazy with no funny. So I thought of myself as almost like an Andy Kaufman type guy, and I got really used to bombing, and I liked it. You get used to it after a while of like, they just don't get me. They don't get, you know, and of course the jokes are awful. It's like, that's what they're not getting. It's not funny, but
I've always admired stuff like that, of like stuff that, like a person like Brody or yourself or a Rory Scovel, that's like being really silly and it doesn't work, and they go like, stick with me.
Yeah.
And then it does pay off, and you're like, I would never have the confidence myself to do that. I still to this day, if I'm like, if something's going, I'm like, ah, fuck this.
Yeah.
Like, I'll fucking bail so fast. And be like, I'm an idiot. I should shut the fuck up.
That's the inclination, though, is to go, nah, I was just kidding. That'd be crazy.
That's 100% my brain. How you just described it, you go like, nah, fuck this. What are we doing? Fuck, this is stupid.
Can you imagine? But then, the thought being, what if it was that the whole time? You know, and that's what Brody did. It was, but that's who he was. And I think what I do is who I am as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now you're headlining. And so you get to do an hour. Do you feel like that's just like a ton of space to fuck around and just.
Yeah, for sure. And then now I think more as the sets get longer, I think more of Rory as an inspiration. I saw him do his improvised special when I lived in Atlanta at the Relapse Theater.
Oh, yeah.
And I saw a couple nights, maybe three nights of him do it. And yeah, so that's so great. So yeah, it's just more time to kind of explore the space, literally and figuratively. Yeah.
I saw Rory, he did this bit on his last special, but I saw him before he taped do it. We were both at this festival in Tulsa, and you talk about like committing to the silly.
Uh-huh.
He does this joke about, he talks about gangbangs, and he doesn't know how they start. And he's like, how do gangbangs, like, He like talks about getting the people. He like does a whole bit about how you get people over to the house. But then he's like, but how do they start? And then he like did this entire act out where he walked around like opening curtains and doors and being like, hey, they're kissing. Guys, they're kissing. And I was like amazed. The next night I was on the same stage and I was like, I'm not here half as free as this guy. I was just standing there being like, joke, 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 joke. Instead of like watching Roar, he like grabbed a balloon whale and like rode it. And it was like this thing where I was like, that kind of freedom to me is so fucking, I think you nailed it. You have to learn how to bomb first.
Yes.
And be comfortable with it.
Well, that's what I've heard this secondhand that someone told Rory, that Rory said this to someone rather, and he said, don't be afraid of the silence. And it's that idea of, if you can really sit in that silence and get used to it, I guess, for years and years and years, then only truly then can you really kill if you are not afraid of the alternative.
Yeah, yeah. I've watched like, you know, like legendary comics at the Cellar work stuff out, and they have that. They're like, they'll try something and they don't buck or ever. They just go like, all right.
Just sit in it.
Yeah, just sit. But man, it's so easier said than done. Especially me, because I'm a people pleaser. Like,
sure,
I absolutely want people to be like, that was great. That was like, you know. Uh-huh. So you're like, start bombing. You're like, oh. I'll do a voice. What voice do you want to hear? I'm so sorry.
I'm just messing around.
Oh, fuck. Why are you guys mad at me?
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Have your parents seen you do stand-up?
Yeah, they have. I was just in Atlanta, so I got to headline my first shows back home this weekend a couple days ago.
Oh, fuck.
So
how was that?
It was
that?
Really cool. It was wonderful. My whole family came and a lot of my friends from high school, and it went really good. Did three shows, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. All did your sold friend, out. Yeah, pretty fun.
Were your friends from high school kind of like,
yeah,
what the fuck? Have they seen you do stand-up?
No.
Because this is a thing that, like, especially with comedy, other jobs you go and you do and you just become.
Uh-huh.
Like you go to medical school and then you become a doctor and then you're like friends that you grow up with. They're like, hey, he's a doctor or whatever. But when you're a comedian, they're kind of like, well, are you good at it?
Uh-huh.
They don't know. But you've gone and gotten good and came back.
Yeah.
I left Denver, started in Tucson, came here and went back. And they kind of saw me do like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't really figured it out yet. Which is almost worse.
Sure.
Because if they watch you bomb, they go like, I'm over it. I've seen him bomb. Yeah, he does stand up or whatever.
Yeah.
Or if you're really good, they go like, he's amazing. But if you're okay, they're like, it was all right.
Yeah.
And that hurts probably the most.
That is the worst one when they go like, that was, man, you are, wow, that was, you were so brave. You know, so brave, man. That was so cool. And you were up there the whole time.
You know what? I got a lot. The first time I headlined Denver in like 2013, I got a lot of like, hey, you're doing it. You're chasing your dream. And you're like, the second you hear that, you're like, fuck me. Do I suck that bad? And then they're like, you know who I really like? And then they tell you someone else they like, and you're like, fuck, this fucking sucks.
They saw me a couple years ago, and I thought I was over the hump. Of course, the tendency, you're all, comedians were kind of delusional anyways, and you always kind of think you're over the hump in a sense. But they saw me do the Laughing Skull in Atlanta, maybe 2 years ago, and I followed Mandel, who's this wonderful Atlanta comedian, and he just burned the room down, and I bombed so it was totally silent.
Oh.
And afterwards, it was all that, where they probably thought, because I talked to my parents, and I'm like, I was hanging out with these great comics, and they all think I'm great, and then they see me, and they're like, did he make that shit? Is he like a pathological liar? Yeah. Like, that was what I was always worried about, is that they would go, oh my God, he's a pathological liar.
This guy's flat out lying.
He's literally insane.
That is the feeling I got when I was in Denver, and they're like, and you're surviving in New York off this.
Uh-huh.
And you're like, dude, it goes way better.
Yeah.
It just goes way fucking, because the first show I headlined there, I fucking bombed.
Sure, yeah.
And then the second one was better. And it was my mom's 60th birthday. Yeah. It would have been, she was 60, and my cousins got her blackout drunk and like put her in a limo. So my family was all blackout drunk while, and the crowd sucked. Dude, I remember a joke, bombing, and my friend's mom was just sitting there like this. And I was like, oh. Oh, my God. I slept over at your house when I was a kid, and now you're watching me just eat shit. So I'm glad you went back and had it. So they saw you at yeah. They saw you have a bad set and then come back and have.
Yes. They saw, like, they would see me every couple years. So they saw really bad, a little less bad, and then suddenly really, really bad. And like, God, is he just going the wrong direction?
Do I say something?
Yeah, he was fine last time.
Do I pull him out of this? I know. Yeah, that's a fun thing to you want to get honesty from your family. But at the same time, you got to protect your ego.
Sure.
We were like, if you tell me I suck right now, I might do some serious damage.
I'm close. Yeah. But yeah, that felt like a really proper homecoming. Like, I've been running the hour a ton this year, so they got to see like the accumulation of a lot of hard work. So.
Are you going to tape it soon?
I think so. I taped it last year. Not being ready for it, thinking I was over the hump, and
sure.
I watched the tape and I was like, this isn't, it's just not there yet.
Yeah,
so
you know how many people don't do that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They just put it out. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, ask, you know, he takes specials for everybody.
I would imagine.
Like,
yeah.
People put out stuff and like, you'd be like, don't put that out. And you're like, I'm putting that out.
Well, you want to be there. You think I have sacrificed so much, and we all have and are all in our own different ways, and everyone wants to be there, and to admit you're not is really hard. Yeah.
Yeah. But I also think, like any job, it's not just comedy, but if you start to learn how to enjoy the work,
sure,
then that becomes less important.
Because
you're kind of like, well, that's like, I think everybody has this idea of, I'm going to tape a special. It's going to blow me up.
Yeah.
I'm going to have no problems. I'm never going to have a stomach ache again. Everything's going to be great. And you're like, no, it's life.
Yeah.
Like, other problems will come up. You'll have other things. But if you enjoy just doing stand-up, it's kind of like what you talk about. Mm-hmm. Like, you have fun. You're sleeping in your car.
Yeah.
Just to do stand-up, because that's the fun part.
Yeah. It's a self-rewarding process. That is, the act is what is rewarding. It's not any of the success. Of course, making a living is wonderful.
Yeah, but brother,
if you like what you're doing, it's okay.
Not a lot of people think that.
I know.
And that's like, that's what sucks.
Yeah.
Is when you're in a business where you're like, guys, it's so fun. We get to do stand up. And, and you're like, you're looking around and everyone's like looking at numbers and all this shit. And you're like, oh, fucking gross, dude.
But I would like to think if they got success, then it would change. They would be like, oh, maybe this isn't, you know.
No, then they
you're probably right.
No, they just chase more of it.
You're probably right.
It's a drug. I think there's like, you know, I think like CEOs and like powerful businessmen are addicted to getting like power and money. That's why there's so many billionaires now, because these motherfuckers get addicted to making money.
Yeah.
And it's not about like my corporation runs smoothly and everyone's taken care of. They're like, I have an insane amount of money and I want more. That always is like, I've always felt bad for sex addicts and food addicts the most.
Because you can truly never
have enough. It's never enough.
Yeah.
And sex, like, I think as far as addictions go, you said you're sober.
Mm-hmm.
How long have you been sober for?
3 years.
Okay.
Yeah. And I was sober for a long time. I stopped when I was 21, and then I got back to it for about a year during COVID when everything was shut down. And so I've been sober again for 3 years. Yeah.
Did you get fucked up a lot when you were a kid? Robitussin and shit.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I had from a pretty young age. Yeah, I was like a pretty severe alcoholic. And yeah, I had a real bad drug problem, all kinds of drugs. Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And this is always interesting to me, because the fact that you pulled the chute at 21.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, do you know how fucking hard that is?
Sure.
No one realizes it. Was it because of comedy you got sober, or was it?
That was part of it. Yeah, I think it was, there was like a 2 year overlap where I was still drinking and partying and doing stand up when I first started. And then watching some of those clips, I got really embarrassed. And I was like, I don't want to be that guy anymore. It had just been about,
where you were like drunk on stage?
Yeah. And I just didn't want to be that guy. I didn't want to be a joke.
Yeah.
You know, and I felt like a joke. That's what when I was 21 years old, like, I had no friends and I had alienated all these people, and I felt like I wasn't a real person, and I wanted to be someone that not only other people respected, but I could like respect myself.
Yeah.
So
when you watch a clip of yourself fucked up,
it's bad.
Oh man.
It's a wake up call.
It is when you see that, you go like, who the fuck is this guy?
Yeah.
And then you feel weird where you're like, ah shit. But stopping it, what was it like getting back into it?
Oh, it was, I felt like I was born again. I had never been happier, and I don't regret it. Yeah.
we are, you're in a safe space, but yeah. I quit drinking 11 and a half years ago, and I can't tell you how often I think about coming back to drinking and smoking cigarettes.
Yeah.
I think about it a lot.
Yeah.
But I know after a month, I would want to get sober again. Mm-hmm. But I think about that month.
Oh, yeah. You're just riding high and you're like, why did I ever stop doing this? Yeah. Especially with COVID, you don't have to wake up and do anything. So I would just get lit and watch Martin Scorsese movies all fucking day.
That's pretty cool.
I would just watch Casino.
Great.
Over and over and over again. The Irishman, even. It just came out.
I mean, get a full day in with
get
that
a full
one.
Day in. So, 4-hour affair.
What brought you back? Was there like a moment where you're like, have a beer?
I was in a pretty bad relationship and I felt really isolated and that was a big part of it. Was I felt very hurt and very alone, and I also thought that the same thing happened, I suppose, to, well, this is a bad reference, but I guess that's what happened to Philip Seymour Hoffman too, is I had been sober not as long as he had been, but 5 years, and I was like, you know, I was so young, like I was 21 when I got sober, maybe I can handle it now. So that was part of it too.
I've had that thought too of like, well, if I just drink a couple beers, because I've had like a couple non-alcoholics and been like, well, if these were real beers, but I know, I know the second,
and maybe you'd be fine for a week, and I kind of was for a week, and I was like, dude, but can I tell you what, it comes back.
Yeah, that's what I'd be waiting for.
Back, yeah.
I'd be waiting for the knock at the door.
Sure.
I might have a couple beers, but it'd be that first time where I'd go, do you want to do a shot of Jameson?
Yeah.
And then I'd just know. So how long did you drink for again?
Just about 2 months pretty heavily.
Yeah.
And then I get the shakes. I get DT. So that was part of the thing why I stopped when I was 21 too, because I was having alcoholic seizures. I had a very bad drinking problem. And then it came right back when I started again. It's something in your...
Your body was kind of like, I remember this.
Yes, it clicks. You're right back where you started. Your tolerance built right back up.
No shit.
Oh, yeah. Really, really
I've always
really
wondered
quickly.
That. Your tolerance went back to what it
super
was.
Super quickly.
I'm going to tell you right now.
Yeah.
Brother, I know a lot of alcoholics. You're quit at 21. You could put them back.
Yeah.
You could probably drink a fucking gallon of grain alcohol and be fine.
Yeah, it was getting to the point. Yeah, by the end of that 2 months, it was like a gallon of vodka. Yeah, Jesus. A day. So, yeah, the handles. Your body, your body just gets used to it.
Well, that's...
Yeah.
You know, that was like the crazy thing for me was when I stopped drinking, Joe List, who was my drinking buddy, he quit like 6 months before me. And he kept saying, he goes, just get to 90 days.
Yeah.
Eat whatever you want, drink whatever you want, as long as it's not alcohol, soda, pizza, eat. And I was losing weight while I was eating like shit.
It's like, because you're not eating 5,000 grams of sugar a day.
That's exactly it. And then I did the math, and I was talking to a doctor, and they were like, well, what did you drink? And I was like, well, I had to have, my tolerance by the end was about 8 beers and 8 shots a night. I would do a shot and a beer, and I'd do 8 rounds. That's like 16 drinks. But that was like a normal night for me. That wasn't even me getting like blackout. That was just me being like, oh, fucking having some drinks. So it's great. I always wondered if I went back, if I would still
right
have
back.
It.
For about a week, I could drink a 6-pack and I would get shit-faced. And then it was like half a gallon of vodka and then 3/4 of a gallon of vodka and then the whole gallon. It happens so quickly,
And then when you quit again, now when you got sober again, were you kind of like, all right, like, did you miss the sobriety at all?
It took a while to click again. I think once you put, it's hard to put the toothpaste back in the tube.
Yeah.
So I would be sober for a couple months, relapse, and that went on for like a year. But I would just do one night relapses where I would get shit faced, be hungover for 3 days, and I was like, I'm never doing it.
Yeah.
A couple months go by, same thing, one night. And I did that up until I moved to Austin, and I got super drunk one night, and it was a kind of a simple thing. That I lost my phone and I lost my wallet, and I woke up in a green room of some podcast studio, and I didn't have my car keys, and I was living in my car, and I was like, dude, I'm too old for this shit. I've lost my home. My home is gone. The car.
Yeah. Your ID.
My ID.
Your way of contacting anyone.
So I do not exist right now. Yeah. I'm like a hobo. Fuck. So yeah, without the car, you're just a homeless person.
Yeah.
So it takes kind of the romance away from living in the car, you're Bob Dylan. Yeah. Without the car, you're a vagrant. So that was part
so
of it.
So Austin, you've been sober the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah, I moved there and I got sober maybe a month later. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That's, it's Comedy's a thing where try it drunk,
yeah,
but quit.
For sure.
Unless you have control over yourself, which...
most people don't.
No, 90% of comics I've met do not. And there's always addictions in different ways. Mm-hmm. What's crazy is when you see people get sober and get addicted to other stuff. Like, they don't realize, like, they just kind of push that energy into something else. And you're like, I've seen people get sober and get addicted to exercise, which you think would be... incredible.
Yeah.
But instead you're like, oh no, they're more unbearable than they were when they were blackout drunk.
Oh yeah.
Because they're talking to me about proteins and like exercises and what they could do for me. And you're like, shut the fuck up.
You're not doing anything for me.
Yeah. Just the only thing worse than someone on coke trying to start a business or drunk telling you the same story three times is a sober person telling you about their routine that they work out and their sets. And you're like, shut the fuck up.
Oh, it's a nightmare. And they're watching every single thing they eat. That's my least favorite type of person is people go, oh, I shouldn't. I hate that. I hate that. Just eat it.
Are you, now that when you were sober, did you get super into candy?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Soda.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Soda and candy.
Soda and candy. Well, your body craves the sugar.
Yeah, and I still am like...
oh, yeah, I have a big sweet tooth.
Dude, I was just in Canada, and they have real chocolate up there.
Whoa.
And so you go to the airport, and you're like, ah, oh, I just like stuffed all these things in there. And then I was sick, and I forgot I bought all this chocolate. And yesterday, I'm packing for Florida tomorrow, and I'm like, oh! I just was like pulling out bags of chocolate. I'm like, oh! And you're like, yeah, that addict's still in me. I'm just like, Katie comes in the bedroom. I'm like, get out of here, slut. I'm eating my fucking chocolate.
I ate a piece of carrot cake from a bodega last night at like 3 a.m.
Hey, welcome to New York.
Pretty cool.
That is the thing, you know. Carrot cake. I think each city has its own advantages. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people try to do this thing where they'll like Austin right now, the big thing is people that live there try to sell you on it. Where they're like, it's where you have to move. It's where everything's going on. You're like, it's got great stuff about it, but there's stuff I don't like about it. New York, a ton of stuff not to like. One of the stuff that is great is everything is open.
Yeah. Oh, I love that.
You can get a piece of carrot cake at 3 a.m.
Yeah, and it was pretty good carrot cake.
Yeah.
It probably gave me, Lou Gehrig's disease or something.
If you get ALS from carrot cake, I'm fucking tracking down that bodega. We're suing the fuck out of them. And you got three shows at Gotham, right?
Just two shows. Two shows tonight at Gotham.
That'll be fucking awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, man. So, yeah, this whole tour has been amazing. I was telling him outside last year I would headline stuff even 2 years ago, but I could never move tickets. And last year I did Chickasha, Oklahoma and Bisbee, Arizona, and I sold probably 10 tickets combined between the two cities. So
we also pick in fucking...
sure, hard markets, Chickasha. And, Chickasha.
Yeah. I lived in Tucson. Bisbee is... I can't sell tickets in Bisbee. And I started in Tucson. Yeah, Bisbee's... that's where Stanhope lives.
Yes, yeah.
Did you go by his house?
Uh-huh. We made gumbo. Yeah.
You did?
He was really nice. We made gumbo.
That's fucking awesome.
He was super nice to me. Yeah. Yeah.
Stanhope is the man.
Yo, he's so cool. And then Christine Levine. And
I love Christine Levine.
She's such an angel. She was so, so nice to me.
Oh, my God. She's great. She was doing a morning show in Tucson.
Oh, cool.
Well, I met her in Austin. She's old school Austin people. Like old school Austin.
That makes sense.
When it was like Velveeta Room and all those and I met her down there for by South by Southwest, but she's incredible.
Yeah.
Stanhope has these people that are he's always got hilarious, unique individuals around him.
Yeah.
That's what I've always loved. I mean, Doug is the man.
Yeah.
Like he's the guy that I grew up listening to his albums and you're like, oh, there's no one better than this guy.
Oh, me too. And I love that Unbookables documentary with Sean Rouse.
Yeah.
And Christine's in that as well.
Isn't Junior in that?
I think so.
I don't know if Junior was a little bit later or not, but yeah.
Yeah.
But Sean Rouse was so, rest in peace, so fucking funny.
Oh, so fun. I give his, when we all became door guys at Mothership, I gave everyone a comedy album that I thought that they would like for Christmas, and I gave a bunch of people Sean Rouse's Spilled Milk. I think it's a great album.
Spilled Milk is fucking great.
Yeah.
It is a phenomenal album.
Yeah. He's so, so unique. His voice is, I think about him often. I wish I could have got to meet him. Yeah.
Yeah. That's for me, that guy is Greg Giraldo. Like, I got to meet him briefly, but didn't get to know him. And he's a guy where I love to put people onto him.
Yeah.
And be like, listen to Good Day to Cross a River. Because it's just like, you hear him at Comedy Works in Denver, and he's just like so fucking sharp.
Yeah.
He's a guy that I wish was around, similar to like a Patrice. Mm-hmm. These guys that die that you're like, I want to know what he would say about this shit.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah. because I think I'm envious of people that are really good at, like, I love people that, I'm jealous of people that can be silly, kind of without any nets, but yeah. I'm also jealous of people that stand by their opinion.
Yeah.
When they have an opinion and they're like, I'm going to drive it like a Bill Burr or something. Cause I'm always like, is this wrong?
I know.
I feel like this is wrong.
I have no spine, and that's so foreign to me that, yeah, I am a unique person in my own ways, but that is so foreign to me, having any sort of opinion about anything.
And driving it home. Yeah.
Except movies. Except movies and music. Yeah.
Yeah. Professional wrestling is the only thing I have stern opinions on. But I can't go up there and be like, I'm going to tell you why I saw Bloodline versus Bloodline coming for a fucking mile out. But yeah, I think it's awesome to watch a guy like you. You know, I think Kill Tony's done a lot for some unique comics. You know, I've seen him help out people like Kim Congdon and that kind of stuff. Yeah. But with you were a clip that I saw where I was like, this guy's funny. And then Shane was like, oh dude, that Casey Rocket guy, he's like, he's fucking funny. And then I saw a couple clips and I was like, oh hell yeah. And it's been great watching you kind of like keep leveling up.
Yeah, well, I just trying to show people different sides of me. It's Kill Tony's been a great platform for me, and then also people getting to see what it's actually like, the longer sets.
That's what you want.
Yeah, the minute is so limiting. Yeah.
Because that's kind of like a Costco sample.
Yeah. It's like, not representative of what I really do, and most of it doesn't make any fucking sense, which is the point.
Yeah.
But it doesn't make any sense the 1 minute. It should be
20.
When you
go up for a minute, like you did the Madison Square Garden shows, when you go up there and do a minute in front of Madison Square Garden... That's got to be fucking terrifying because all you have is a minute.
Yeah.
And it's an arena. An arena takes a fucking, you got to get them going.
Yeah. Yeah. It takes a second.
Did you feel like you had to change your set a ton for that?
Well, a lot of my jokes are really short. They're like, most of them aren't even traditional setup punchline jokes. So I just made sure I had something good in the beginning that would get a laugh. And then that was just my thought process, is to fit as many little jokes into the minute. So, you know, economy of words style. Yeah.
I mean, because if you told me to do a minute, I'd be like, I don't even know if I could get to my punchline.
Yeah.
Like, I'd just be stuck in a setup.
And that's what most people are like. My stuff is mostly one sentence throwaway stuff, so I can fit a ton of stuff in there. Yeah.
Which is great. Having a style that benefits you in certain positions. Mm-hmm. Bargatze always used to say this about late night shows. Well, when late nights were still really big and they do auditions for like Conan or like the Tonight Show in New York, everyone would be stressing about taking out the cuss words or whatever. And Nate would be like, all I got to do is just take 5 minutes of my stuff and go do it.
Yeah.
He's like, 'cause I'm clean, so I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
And you're like, ah, fuck. That kind of made me think about what you were saying, where you're just like, oh, I've got a bunch of tiny jokes. So it fills a minute more than you think.
Yeah. It's longer than you think, but most people do. A minute is super hard, so I get it. Yeah,
it was funny. They were filming a documentary about Kill Tony, and the producer was like, "What's it like? How hard is it to do a new minute every week?" And I was kind of like, "Fuck you!" Like a new minute.
Yeah,
but then when you think about it, you go, "That is kind of challenging because you have to make it fit in a minute." And there's no way. I mean, I couldn't even set up a voice in a minute. I'd be like, "Oh, that'd be crazy. If it'd just be so 80s." Be like, what if a Macho Man
turn around
and then do it again? And you're like, fuck, I suck. I fucking hate myself.
Yeah, it is hard to set it up without being hacky.
Do you think you're going to stay in Austin the rest of the time? Or do you see yourself, because once you start working the road, you don't really have to be anchored anywhere.
Yeah, I like, that's where most of my friends are. We're really close. So I like being in Austin. If I get real wealthy, I'd like to have another apartment in Chicago. I love Chicago.
So hell yeah.
I would love to have an apartment in Wrigleyville.
Yeah.
Go see all the Cubs games. I'm a huge Cubs guy.
So, oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Diehard Cubs guy. Yeah.
How'd you become a Cubs fan?
My family's from Illinois. Okay. So my mom currently lives in Illinois and trains horses. But, yeah, man. They're all from Illinois, so I grew up a Cubs fan.
Mm-hmm. Wrigleyville fucking rules.
Oh, it's so cool. So cool. Such good energy. Yeah.
I love the Chicago scene, too. They've got a bunch of funny young comics in Chicago.
That's what it seems like. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's Jeffrey Asmus, who I love.
Yeah.
I first saw in New York, but he had came up in like Madison, then Chicago, then New York. And it just seems like Chicago's like... kind of like the cold version of Austin, where it's kind of like you can go and get good at comedy and then go somewhere else if you need to.
Definitely. Yeah, it's an A-level scene. Yeah, there's so many funny people. Peyton Ruddy's another great Chicago guy. Matthew Mitchell. Yeah, so, yeah, I have a lot of good friends from there.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, Chicago's, I like that. I like when I hear people say, like, cities that I'm like, yeah, go to Chicago. I'm not working against Austin, but I'm just saying, like, I like that, because sometimes comedy feels so, like, cliquish that they're like, if you're not in Austin, you're not anywhere.
Sure.
Like, but there's other cities that are doing it great.
Denver's a great city, too.
I was just going to say,
Denver's fucking a wonderful scene.
And I watched Denver, you know, I grew up there, but I didn't start there.
Yeah.
So that was a weird thing for me to go back and be like, can I fuck around? But it was guys like Ben Roy, Adam Caton Holland, Andrew Overdahl, who did like Los Comicos and Grolix.
Mm-hmm.
But then those guys, the guys below them were Sam Talent, Chris Sharpie, David Borey. And you would see like the Fine Gentleman's Club. And so it was kind of awesome. When you see a scene get built up, you're like, this is awesome. Like its own little ecosystem. I like that shit.
It's a self-breeding thing. Yeah, when there's like Sam is such an inspiration to so many people. And
Sam Talent?
Yeah, and it makes all the people around him so much better. Yeah,
I think he's our generation Stanhope.
I think so. He was a huge inspiration on me. I saw him in Boise and it changed my whole shit. Yeah,
he's just so the great way that he riffs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, dude, that guy will go off for an hour on something.
Yeah.
That, like a light will go out.
I know.
And he'll have an hour on
I know.
It. He's so fucking smart.
Him and Scoville are in the same school.
Yeah.
They're
Scoville,
brilliant.
Yeah. I call him in Scoville and Sam are the guys that I watch and I go, I'm a fraud.
Mm-hmm.
You just watch and you go like, I fucking suck. These guys are so good. Rory and I were texting about something and I was just like, I think I gushed too much. Cause like, I was like, dude, you're the fucking funniest. And then he's like, didn't answer. I was like, I suck. I suck so bad.
Sorry, somebody stole my phone.
Sorry, dude.
Some freak.
I'm not that big of a freak. Whatever. You're like kind of funny. Fuck. Well, dude, I appreciate you coming by and hanging out while you're doing the New York Comedy Festival.
Yeah, so exciting. And I'm a huge wrestling fan, too. So all this stuff's super cool.
Oh, yeah, man. People gave me, I have like a whole Macho Man shelf.
Oh, I love that.
That people were giving me. And then they just give me like small random tchotchkes and shit.
I have this but in my house, but it's Grimace. It's all Grimace.
Really?
Stuff.
You're a big Grimace guy?
Well, I did it on Kill Tony and a couple different things. I used to do a Grimace podcast. So I have hundreds of Grimace artifacts.
When how did you feel about the Mets adopting him this year?
I cut ties with the whole Grimace thing. I've come to peace with it. He's for the people and he was never mine to begin with. So I got a little bitter about it and I was like, I was the first one who thought that stuff was funny.
Yeah.
And then but I was love like, that. Just give it.
You hipstered it?
Yeah.
You're like, I was in a Grimace in 2007.
Yeah.
Someone please make a, if you're an artist, please someone do a drawing of Casey Rocket with his hand outstretched to a walking away Grimace saying, I need to let you go.
I just can't quit you.
Yeah. Or do the picture of God touching
the creation of Adam.
The creation of Adam with Grimace and Casey Rocket. That's what's so funny is there's so many talented people now like on the internet that listen to podcasts because they're like bored and they just want to listen to something where they draw that sometimes you toss stuff out there and they'll come back and be like, hey, I did it. And you're like, holy shit. I was just joking around.
What a world.
Yeah. It's fucking nuts.
But yeah, CaseyRocketComedy.com.
Check him out. Trust me, go see him live. Guy's a fucking ball of dynamite. He's hilarious. You're going to enjoy the hell out of it. CaseyRocket.com.